As a youth and a young 20-something, there was no one less likely to go to church than me. My father was a fundamentalist atheist who stated clearly and often that religion was a panacea for the uneducated. My mother had been raised church, but by the time I came along, was so busy with church, so busy that church was no longer a priority, and she never spoke of religion or faith. I came of age when Jerry Falwell and the New Right filled the papers, and I was fascinated by European history. Neither endeared me to Christianity, which was the only kind of church I knew about. When I was a senior in high school, my boyfriend had a brief flirtation with Lutheranism. I went to his baptism, and the liturgy went on and on about forgiveness for sins. "What sin?" I asked him. "What sins have you committed?" I found the assumption of human sin an affront to my progressive upbringing that taught me people were naturally good and reasonable. The obsession with sin and the idea that the only way God would ever forgive people for sin was through the death of his son completely baffled me. If I had a faith, it was in the ability to create a perfect life. Living the perfect life would make me happy. I went to college at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington, and there I dreamed up the perfect life with the man who would one day become my husband. Our dream went like this. We would buy a bit of land, build an energy-efficient house, and grow our own food. We would work part-time at some sort of meaningful work while pursuing our passions. I would write, and he would make fine furniture. We would have children. And we did it. We had a child, bought land, bought goats and pigs, had another child, started our house. I got part-time professional work as an academic grant writer. But it wasn't like the dream. And it certainly was not perfect. In my perfect dream life, my gardens looked like something out of Sunset Magazine. And the children were sweet adornments like the children on Downton Abbey. Pages of novels fell effortlessly from my fingers, and I would publish my first novel by the age of 30. Real life was instead gritty, dirty, and exhausting. 2 weeks before we moved into our house, the well caved in. We would not save enough money to dig a new one for 2 years. On moving day, the drywall was stacked as high as my chest and filled the entire main room of the house. We did have a wood stove, a refrigerator, a cook stove, and a bit of countertop, but all were old and salvaged. The house would not be finished until I moved out 10 years later. The children were amazing, but intense and all-consuming. I saw Madeline L'Engle speak during this time, and I asked, how does one write with young children? Basically, she said, you didn't. Children eat books, she said. And then added, it doesn't matter very much. Her answer mystified me for years. The goats got sick often. The neighbor's dog killed our chickens. When we finally could garden after we got water, the beds were filled with weeds. And we were poor. Living simply off the land is not cheap. Healthy goats and chickens and good gardens require significant and regular cash investments. Building a house yourself requires endless money. 2 part-time jobs are not lucrative. And this was the mid-1990s, and the poor were under attack. Their moral character was questioned on radio and news and in newspapers. In Spokane, where we lived, among the people I met, consumerism was the thing. When the boys were invited to a woman's house for a playdate with her sons, she sat me in the kitchen for an hour, poring over potential wallpaper borders for her family room. My house didn't even have drywall. People wanted to meet at McDonald's for playdates, but that $8 for that outing was simply not available. In the news, there were articles about people refusing to buy minivans because one woman said, "They make me feel like a hag." We had junk cars acquired when my husband found abandoned cars in people's yards and fixed them so that they ran, or barely ran. I felt dreadfully alone. I kept losing track of why I was doing what I was doing. I knew I didn't want to give my best energy to an institution in order to have a comfortable lifestyle, but I didn't want what I had either, a half-inch finished passive solar house, fruit trees that fell over because the moles ate their roots. Seriously? And being so stressed about money that I was not happy. I couldn't seem to figure out how to get where I was going or where that even was. How do I take the road less traveled, I remember asking urgently. And this voice seemed to come from outside me and reverberate through the house, community, and a spiritual life. I completely ignored that many people would have interpreted this experience as God speaking to me. That was not my paradigm. But I knew absolutely that it was the truth. I also knew immediately that church was the institution that specialized in community and spirituality. And this did not make me happy. I was not going to church. It was my mother who had, in the years since my brother and I left home, had started attending the Unitarian Universalist Church of Spokane, who convinced me to give it a try. And clearly I was desperate because I was in my 20s and I listened to my mother. I remember that first day holding my baby in one arm and firmly gripping my 2-year-old's hand and heading upstairs to the nursery. An older woman smiled at me. "It gets easier," she said. I told the nursery worker to come and get me immediately if my baby cried. He cried a lot, so that seemed inevitable. Well, he did cry, and no one came to get me. They must have recognized how desperately I needed a quiet hour. And the service was lovely. There was music and singing, and the minister kept saying things about paying attention and gratitude and love and forgiveness. It was like a foreign language to me. I was raised in consumer culture, where what we do for a living, the activities we participate in, and what we have matters. And even though I wanted to do it differently, my perfect life was all about doing and having. I was a writer. I had an energy-efficient house. I canned all my homegrown tomatoes. I came back to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Spokane again and again because for 1 hour each week, people were really kind to me and to my sons. I came back because I met people who became my friends. I came back because slowly, week after week, the messages of love and compassion, of attention and mindfulness, and gratitude and mystery began to answer my questions about taking the road less traveled. The church saved me. I still didn't know exactly where I was going, but I learned it was the approach to life and the nature of my relationships that truly mattered. What I owned and the activities I participated in and how I made a living mattered very much less. That baby and that 2-year-old and their younger brother are grown now, all delightful young men in their early 20s. Life after that early crisis unfolded as life does, with wonderful parts and new challenges and new crises. The father of my son and I divorced. I walked away from that early dream of life lived simply on the land and writing novels. I began to study for the ministry. My children had successes and challenges. I fell in love with a woman. We later adopted a child, and once it was legal, we married. And then we divorced 2 years ago. Through each change and tumultuous period, it was my church community and my faith that helped me through. The community offered care, solid grounding, and love. My faith provided guidance and hope. My faith has grown and deepened over the years as I have experienced more life and have studied theology and the wisdom of many traditions, including religions, poets, philosophers, scientists. So what is my faith? My faith is grounded in three teachings. The first is Jesus' teaching, the grand commandment, that you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your mind and all your soul, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. As Unitarian Universalist, I interpret that this means to love life and all that sustains and makes our existence possible with all our heart and soul and mind. I read the second half to mean that we are to love ourselves and others by treating all compassionately and justly. For me, this teaching asks us to attend to the interconnectedness between all beings. It is echoed through many religions and many wisdom traditions. The second teaching is from the tradition of the process theologians. I have faith in creativity. I believe creativity is a foundational principle of existence. It makes transformation and change possible. I find the Big Bang and evolution not only theories resulting from scientific understanding, but compelling creation stories that remind us that life and the universe are ultimately creative and always becoming. Life adjusts to new circumstances, uses mistakes to its advantage, and makes the old new. People are part of life. Creativity is our natural medium. I additionally find guidance on how to live in the yogic and Buddhist teachings. I meditate nearly every day and do yoga regularly. I find daily benefit from the teachings on mindfulness, the necessity of giving up grasping and aversion, being compassionate, taking the middle path, and living in the present. I particularly find guidance in the emphasis in these traditions on practice. We practice mindfulness, generosity, compassion, justice work. We never arrive at some perfect end. We are always becoming. The act of living my faith within community saves me again and again. Community supports me through difficulties and helps me be my very best self. My faith offers guidance for living and being, allows me to trust the process, and gives me hope. Expressions of hatred escalate in the United States. Ecosystems are destroyed daily. Temperatures rise, causing severe droughts and unpredictable weather. Income inequality increases. The Middle East continues to be ripped apart by war. Stories of images of suffering and injustice from these realities bombard me. I go through periods of anger and despair, and other times I simply cannot find any direction at all. Not unlike that period of crisis in my 20s. So how does church and my faith save me in these times? I remember my greatest strength comes when I work with others. Remember, a single stick is easy to break, but a bundle of sticks is unbreakable. On my own, I'm overwhelmed by the challenges of our times and my commitment to loving others as myself. Instead of acting, I am inclined to realize I have not cleaned behind the refrigerator in at least 6 months and it is suddenly quite urgent. Or that I must file, delete, or follow the links in the 3,000 emails in my inbox. My faith also offers guidance on how to respond to the pain and suffering in our world. My response must always be guided by love. Love of the world, love of all who reside here, and love of myself. Hatred of others and exhaustion of self cannot be part of a meaningful and sustainable response. The call to love myself reminds me to learn and honor my and offer my very best gifts. My faith gives me hope when situations seem hopeless, which they often do, particularly in the case of the shooting of black men by police officers. Change seems hard and slow. But I have hope because I believe in creativity and that change is foundational to existence, and I can trust them. Creativity makes new out of our mistakes, diverse elements, and often adversity. The principle of creativity allowed the small mammals in the age of dinosaurs to over time transform into human beings and rhinoceroses. Creativity allowed the rise of the United States, where ideas from different places and cultures come together to create our form of democracy. Creativity made possible all that we know, see and feel inside and outside ourselves. Our transformation into generous and more compassionate people is made possible by attending to others, to commitment to practice, and our own experiences. All that works together to create a new you. And it always happens in ways we can't understand, a timing we do not control. My faith in creativity also allows me to trust that things will change. If I respond in love and stay in relationship and am willing to learn and grow, I will change. Others will change. The situation will change. I can trust that. I can't choose the outcomes, however. We never get to know how things will change. We can't predict it and make it happen. And it might not be what we wanted or what we predicted or what was foreseen. Creativity mixes things up and the completely new is possible. My faith also gives me the tools to stay grounded through all that happens. Regular spiritual practice, worship, sustained relationships ground me. Once upon a time, I thought I could create a perfect life and be happy. If I did all the right things, had the right stuff, went on the right experiences, and lived the right lifestyle. Now I know that life is never perfect. It is a whirl of joy, pain, confidence, despair, and so much more, positive and difficult. Now I think that life is more like a dance, that we can't plan what happens in that dance. We spin and bow and step through our days to the music that plays, whether it is lilting or heavy. We strive to be grateful, compassionate, joyful dancers, whatever the music is. And sometimes we are not. We have two left feet, can't hear the music, don't care, get irritated, speak bitterly and unkindly. And so what do? We take a deep breath, we shrug, we forgive, and we remember that we want to be loving, compassionate, just people. And so we dance again. There is no arrival. There is no end. There is only the practice of the dance, creatively and with grace and with love. And I am so looking forward to learning to dance with all of you. So I believe this is the time in the service when people ask questions or comment. and in the most kind and generous and thoughtful way possible?
Let it be a dance we do. Are there questions, comments?
Hi, Tracy. I'm Suzanne Riles.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Coordinator for Long Range Planning, and my eyes are full of tears. Welcome.
Thank you.
Other comments, questions?
I just wanted to say the Long Range Plan is pretty great. I was impressed.
Hi. Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
And you are Clive Miller.
Clive Miller.
Last time I checked.
And I will remember that for sure.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm Jennifer Frickman, and I was looking around surreptitiously at faces while you preached. And I saw a lot of people nodding their heads and smiling. It was really cool. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mary Usui. And I'm already upset that you're only here for 2 years.
Hi, I'm Diane Friedman, and we have a tradition here that we do services called This I Believe, where people get up and talk about how they came to UU and where their spirit. And I feel like you shared something very similar to that with us, and it was a wonderful introduction to you. And I really appreciate that you did that for us, and welcome.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments?
Just want to say that's a great opening service for you, because now we know who you are. Welcome. Oh, I'm Rosie, but you knew that.
I knew that.
Other comments or questions?
I'm Norma, and for 18 years we had a dance choir here at WOLF.
Awesome.
And I just thought about it this morning at the meditation, and you've continued the spirit that was in the dance group. Thank you.
Among other qualities I love about you is your sense of humor. I couldn't live without mine, and I'm glad you are here with it.
And you are Della
Sloan. Good to be able to laugh at yourself.
This morning before church, I was thinking about our mission and about you, Tracy, and I was thinking that Sarah really brought us through the planting seeds of inspiration, and I feel like you've been sent to us to bring us to the growing in beloved community and in caring community, I think is our words, and perhaps then compassionate, thank you, Suzanne, community, and that perhaps you're preparing us for the person then who will help us to bloom in the wider world.
That's lovely.
You are so welcome.
Other questions, comments?
I'm a practical guy, and I have to ask a practical question.
Okay.
Did you ever finish the sheetrocking the house?
We did. We did. We finished it. It had a few bumps in it because my ex-husband did it himself, because we were those kind of people. So, but it was finished. It got painted. There was no, what are they called, rims around the top with, you know,
congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Lynn Schroeder, real quick, because I've already said too much. Thank you so much. Exactly what I needed today. I was on the verge of tears and crying at the same time. Thank you so much.
Welcome. Hi, my name is Kirsten Feldman, and I have a very urgent question.
Yes.
Is it actually necessary to clean behind your refrigerator?
Well,
I feel like I'm learning
you know
so
what?
Much from you already.
On certain days when you have to turn the news off because it's so horrible, sometimes it's urgent. Sometimes. You know, it really scares you a lot, usually, my experience.
I'm Salima Malson, and I just want to say that off and on over the 15 years that I have been here, actually 16 years. I have considered leaving this congregation from time to time, and now I know why it is that I never did that, because I love the dance, and I love the process, and I'm so glad you're here. Welcome, welcome, Tracy.
My name is Terry Riddell, and we spoke briefly last week. I'm going to ask, since I'm in my own job search, and you've just started a job, I was wondering, from where you stand, what are your first 30 days going to look like? I know you've been having meetings, but I...
Oh, what are my first days?
Yeah, and your priorities. And what are you going to look at?
So far I've gotten to know people on the board, on the committee on ministry. I've been just trying to get, like, organized and get to know people. And that is my first priority for the next month or so, is to just kind of get the lay of the land, see who people are, what people are working on, where there's issues that you might want to address or be concerned about, and work with those. That's my goal, just in this first month or 2 months or whatever, is to do that. So it's been good. It's been great. It feels like a really healthy congregation to me so far. You know, nobody's opened the closets with the things in them yet, but but so far it's looking good.
from what I can gather, Sarah got that pleasure to deal with.
Yes, it seems to me. I'm really good friends with Sarah, so you've come commended quite highly.